Well, we are giving Dr. Charles Yerush a call at his home out of state here on the Thursday before Easter, but it is Easter morning as this is broadcast. So happy Easter to you, Charlie, and to your family. And as we kind of set up at the beginning of this program today, we're going to talk a little bit about your background and the increasing ways that folks are integrating kelp, and we're going to play a little bit of a role in helping folks who may not be as familiar in learning about it. But first, before we get the conversation started, I want to remind folks to mark their calendars to join BH Care on Saturday, June 7th from 10 to 3 for A Chance to Shine and the agency's Walk to Remember. It's all happening at Quarry Walk in Oxford. This annual event raises critical funds to support BH Care programs and services. All proceeds from A Chance to Shine are going to help countless children, adults, and families in the greater New Haven area, from the shoreline to the valley, as they strive to recover from mental illness, substance use, domestic violence, and other health risk behaviors. Volunteers are also being sought for this event, as well as sponsors. You can learn more about getting involved or come out to participate. All you need to do is visit achancetoshinect.org for more. All right. Well, speaking of A Chance to Shine, Charlie, we always love to give you a chance to shine. Charlie Yerush and I have been acquaintances for many, many years. He is a biologist, a marine scientist, professor emeritus at the University of Connecticut. He's a visiting scientist at Woods Hole Oceanographic Institute and is also a scientist affiliate with an organization called Green Wave. Did I get it all?
You got it all. John.
Thank you, my friend. So, as we mentioned earlier in the introduction, you know, maybe there's a surprising number of folks out there who are beginning to integrate kelp, your pride and passion for all these many decades, into their lifestyle. Maybe even they're going to be serving some on their Easter holiday today. But before we talk about your experiences around the world with cultures that have been using kelp in their households, lifestyles, and diets for maybe centuries, let's remind them a little bit about some of the exciting things that you're working on literally as we speak that are happening in Connecticut and New England in regards to kelp and the seaweed that we all should be eating more of.
Well, the kelp that I'm very interested in is called the sugar kelp. It's a naturally occurring brown seaweed that occurs within Long Island Sound. It actually extends as far north into the Arctic, and it even goes into the northern Pacific. And just imagine, this particular seaweed can grow up to 30 feet in length. It anchors itself to rocks and a hard substrate, and it's a very critical organism in the marine environment, providing a habitat for many marine organisms. It's the base of the food chain in areas like Long Island Sound and other bays and estuaries along the U.S. East Coast. And in the last 20 years, we've been able to develop the farming of this particular seaweed, so we no longer have to worry about going to the wild populations and harvesting these wild populations and potentially destroying habitats. We could farm it. And we started the farming of this particular kelp in the 1980s in my laboratories at the University of Connecticut. And after about 15 years, it started getting traction with laboratories in Europe as well as in Canada, and people are paying attention to the aquaculture of the sugar kelp, because we're finding it now. This sugar kelp has got many virtues. Besides being edible, it also can be part of an animal feed diet, and that could potentially cut down methane production by cows and other farm animals, and it also produces gelling-like substances. So if we talk about biopolymers, sugar kelp can be very attractive in the biopolymer industry. Also, sugar kelps can produce what we call plant biostimulants. And these plant biostimulants have an amazing property. They can reduce, they can enhance disease resistance, drought hardiness of our terrestrial crops. So the sugar kelp has come a long way. And now in North America, the University of Connecticut, when I was at UConn full-time and having a lab, we were leading the way, but now most of that work has been transferred to my colleagues' labs at Woods Hole Oceanographic Institution and also to the Green Wave organization.
So in my understanding is that the sugar kelp that's being raised for consumption, it literally has 100% utility because, as you as you mentioned, if it's not being harvested for immediate consumption, even the leftover kelp that ages out of consumable use for human food, it, you, as you mentioned, it can be reconstituted into this fertilizer or feed, right?
Oh, it can be reconstituted as plant biostimulants. It can go into the feed applications. It could be dried and produced into a powder, and that has even more opportunities for utilization. You know, when we first started sugar kelp farming out of my lab, I had a couple of research farms in Long Island Sound. I had one up in the areas of the Gulf of Maine outside of Portland, Casco Bay, with a company at that time called Ocean Approved. Today, it's called Atlantic Sea Farms. And from our humble beginning in my lab in Long Island Sound, where we had very little production in the this past year, Atlantic Sea Farms reports that they processed almost 1.4 million pounds of sugar kelp. They're the largest producer of sugar kelp products, and it's been really nice to see their expansion along the U.S. East Coast, and they work with farmers also in Connecticut, especially there's a small company that has been started in Stonington called the Stonington Kelp Company, and one of our first Green Wave farmers, Susie Flores, has done a remarkable job in marketing her sugar kelp for food and feed that she is growing in Long Island Sound.
And for people who may say to themselves, well, you know, this is crazy. I've never heard of kelp. It's because America is kind of relatively new to the game here, but there is actually a global World Kelp Week coming up in June. I mean, this has been a thing in other cultures for centuries in some places. America, thanks in great part to passionate advocates like yourself and your colleagues, it's coming on here in a big way. So in the last 5 or 6 minutes of conversation time we have with you here on Easter morning, Charlie, you know, folks are listening, they're getting maybe their Easter feast ready, maybe they're already integrating kelp into their daily diet or their household, maybe even some serving a kelp dish or kelp integrated into a dish for their Easter celebration today and tomorrow for the Orthodox folks. You have traveled all over the world and virtually, ate kelp with hundreds of different cultural communities. Talk a little bit about how you have seen some of the most easy ways to work kelp into a household diet.
Well, the sugar kelp is very, very nice. It's very simple in putting into a diet. It's got a mild flavor, crunchy texture. It's high in vitamins, minerals, antioxidants, and fiber. And so these attributes of sugar kelp make it ideal to be part of the diet. And most recently, North Coast Seed Food Products up in New Hampshire just started producing kelp enhanced Swedish meatballs. And so they expect this will put another demand on the table for kelp products there. And when you go to Asia and you see how the different types of kelps that they produce go into their everyday food application, is just amazing. I mean, in China, it was an imperative to farm the sea because they didn't have enough arable land. Mm-hmm. And so with the farming of their sugar kelp species that's locally grown there, they produce a major agricultural industry, similarly in Korea as well, and also in Japan. U.S. is basically just coming to the table, and we are making great improvements in the last 6 or 7 years, because in the U.S. we started a breeding program that will give us the opportunity to produce sugar kelp that may have high vitamin content, high mineral content, maybe more antioxidants, more fiber. All these are important attributes of a food product, and so we're seeing this as being part of the future. Part of the future for food products in the U.S. Keep in mind, we don't need to use fresh water. We don't need to use fertilizer. We don't need to use pesticides to grow the sugar kelp. And also, there are other kelps as well, besides sugar kelp, that are starting to come to market, especially here in the Northeast U.S.
And I guess the last part of our conversation, for people who still say, I'm not eating seaweed, I'm not eating kelp, I'm not ready for that yet. Excuse me. First, I will say, if you haven't tried a deep fried piece of kelp wrapped scallop, then you are truly missing something. And if you like the fried calamari, because you like that kind of tender yet kind of bouncy texture, that's chewy but tender texture, that's what I like most about it. It's not just the flavor, it's the texture you described earlier, that's kind of like soft but bouncy, and it's got and it can be treated with all different types of sauces and vinegars and mustards, and you can everybody can make a kelp dish their own with just the raw product and a couple of easy household ingredients that they happen to favor. But in the last 3 minutes or so we have with you, for those who say no, not going there yet, there is still a good reason to support and talk about kelp, because every kelp farm is hedging against ocean contamination, toxins, and pollution, right?
Yeah, I mean, we have to understand that the kelp in a farming environment does take up nutrients from the water, which is naturally occurring, and these excess nutrients could be causing other problems, and the kelp can mitigate that in their the ability to grow quickly. More nutrients, they grow quickly. They also grow during the winter months, which is very important because there's very little conflict in the coastal zone in growing or farming the kelp. So we look at these opportunities being very, very important for this upcoming industry. And keep in mind, we have a working waterfront in Connecticut. And this also extends into Long Island, New York, where kelp farming was taking place as well, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, New Hampshire, and also up in Maine. We're providing now jobs that all started from the University of Connecticut lab that I had for 40-some-odd years at UConn.
Well, Charlie, as always, it's great to have a conversation with you. I'm always looking forward to visiting with you and chatting with you again, or just bumping into you at the grocery store, because you are maybe in Florida this morning, but you are a tried and true Connecticut native, and you have really kind of led the charge here in bringing this whole idea of kelp consumption and farming into kind of the American focus. So we very much appreciate it. Happy Easter again to you and your family. Dr. Charlie Yarish is a biologist and marine scientist, professor emeritus at UConn. He's a visiting scientist at the Woods Hole Oceanographic Institute and also affiliated as a scientific authority with Green Wave. Charlie, once again, all my best, and we'll talk.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.